This is All In. I'm Miriam Sob. A bill that would make improvements to law enforcement in Indiana has passed the State House and State Senate and is heading to the governor's desk. It's known as HB 1006. Some call it law enforcement reform, others justice reform. So what exactly is it and what impact will it have on Hoosiers? We'll get into all that and more on today's show. But first, joining us now to give us more of an understanding of this bill is Brandon Smith, State House reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Welcome, Brandon.
Thanks for having me on.
So just to start off with, you know, a lot of us hear about bills passing or being debated, and it can be confusing what we should be paying attention to and what is just the process playing out. So take us through House Bill 1006. What exactly is it?
Sure. So to really start talking about it, you have to go back in time to last year. The work on this bill started before we saw a lot of the protests around the state and around the country related to police reform and police brutality and the killings of black and brown Americans by police. But obviously the work around this bill took a much more intense focus after the killing of George Floyd. And we saw those protests around Indiana and around the country. And I would argue it probably made the bill a lot harder, quite frankly, to get done in that climate. But the work of Republican Representative Greg Stuwald, and along with the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, but particularly Representative Robin Shackelford, who's the chair of the caucus, went on over the course of most of the last year. And the product that came out this session is a pretty extensive piece of legislation. So let me just kind of run down for you some of the things it does. It requires de-escalation training for all Indiana law enforcement officers, not just when they're first getting trained in the academy, but also ongoing training that they have to do on a variety of subjects. De-escalation will be part of that. It requires that. So the Indiana Law Enforcement Training Board certifies officers in Indiana. Basically, that's how, if you are allowed to be a police officer in Indiana, is you're certified by this training board. This bill would allow the training board to decertify an officer for misconduct, which means they wouldn't be able to serve as an officer in the state of Indiana anymore. And it also broadened the definition of what misconduct is. It used to require basically a criminal conviction of some sort. I think it was like a couple of misdemeanors or a felony. Now it wouldn't even necessarily require a criminal conviction. So it's really trying to get at those cops who should not be on the force. It also says if you are a police agency trying to hire someone, you have to reach out to their previous law enforcement agencies that they worked for to ask for a full employment record. And those agencies, if they are in Indiana and so governed by the state laws, have to provide that, because I think it was the state police who testified in the committee that a problem they often get when they are trying to hire officers is that they'll reach out to that officer's former agency, say, hey, did this person work for you? And the only answer they get back is, yep, he worked for us. Yep, she worked for us. Mm-hmm. And that's how bad cops keep getting employed, because their new employers don't know about what was in their past. So that's something the bill does. It makes makes it a crime if a law enforcement officer turns off their body camera with the intent to conceal a criminal act. It also includes $70 million to sort of overhaul facilities at the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy. Those facilities are outdated. In some cases, they may even be, you know, in disrepair. And this bill would appropriate $70 million to sort of beef up training there. And ILEA, as it's known, trains most of the law enforcement officers in the state. So it's a pretty comprehensive effort. And so this is my 11th session. I've been doing this for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And I've been saying this for a little while now. In terms of the spotlight that was on this issue and the intensity of the subject, I can't remember a more significant and impressive feat than the passage of this bill this session with not a single no vote the entire time. No one voted against it in the House or Senate committee. No one voted against it in the House or Senate floor. It has the support of groups like the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, the NAACP, the Indiana Black Expo, the Indiana Public Defender Council, the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council. and every major law enforcement organization in the state. I've never seen that before.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking about law enforcement reform and particularly House Bill 1006, which is headed to the governor's desk. And a reminder, if you have any questions or comments for any of the guests today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail or call us at 866-476-3881. Now, Brandon, you mentioned that you haven't seen anything like this in all of your years at the State House, which is something I wanted to get at. Why do you think that is? I mean, is there a particular reason? Is it the times we're living in? What could be the explanation?
Well, first of all, obviously, like I said, the work on the bill, Representative Stuwald has talked about this when he's presented the measure, and I've talked to him about it too, is the work did start before the sort of spotlight shone on police reform issues, particularly last year around the killings mm-hmm. of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and Rayshon Reed here in Indiana, in Indianapolis. But obviously, the national conversation that is going on around police reform and the need for it put a brighter spotlight on the issue. We've seen criminal justice reform in various bills over my 10 years here. I think about, actually, several years ago, House Bill 1006 from a different year that rewrote the entire criminal code. That I would also count among the more impressive feats that I have seen accomplished by the General Assembly in my time here, also authored, I would note, by Representative Greg Stuwald. But this one was, what's incredible about it is not just all of the groups who are supporting it. I mean, I defy you to find 10 bills that the Indiana public defenders and prosecuting attorneys agree unanimously on, along with every law enforcement group, along with the NAACP and the Black Caucus and things like that. Just getting all those groups on one side on anything is impressive. But it's also the scope of it. This doesn't just do one or two things. This gets to a lot of the issues that, for instance, every year the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus comes out with their legislative agenda. It's not just focused on police or criminal justice. It's a broad agenda that affects more than just the Black community, but obviously speaks to the issue that the Black Caucus represents. But they've had several of the items in this bill on their agendas in multiple sessions in the past. So the fact that they could get a lot of this into this bill and still have the support of groups who were traditionally on the other side of these debates from them, again, it's just I cannot downplay how significant that is, because we're also not, I mean, like I said, this is a national conversation, and it's not like this bill or something like it is getting passed by tons of state houses around the country either.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, with all of the apparent agreement for this bill, were there any concerns while you were covering this hearing about anybody sort of second guessing it or thinking maybe it's not doing enough, but then eventually just coming on board just to be part of the group?
As far as I know, I don't know of any group who was publicly against this bill. Certainly no one ever testified against it. And like I said, it didn't get any no votes from any of the 150 lawmakers in the General Assembly. Now, I will point out something that Democratic Senator Eddie Melton said on the floor earlier this week as the Senate was passing this bill, sending it to the governor's desk for his signature. Senator Melton, who is a member of the Black Caucus, noted that this is not the end of the conversation. This is not everything that everybody wants on this issue, but it is a huge step forward in trying to create or recreate or reestablish or establish trust between the community and law enforcement, because that's something that folks have been talking about, particularly the Black Caucus has been talking about over the last year, that is critical to get, because it's lacking in a lot of these communities. And it's you can understand why, certainly, as you see everything that has been going on. But this bill takes a step forward in that direction. Again, this isn't the end of the conversation, but to make such a big leap forward is a better start for Indiana than, again, most other states have right now.
So you've mentioned a couple times that this is better than what some of the other states are doing. Is there any sort of information that we have now to show that Indiana is ahead of the game when it comes to reforms, or are they about on par with where states are heading right now?
No, I mean, Indiana, in terms of a comprehensive package, I haven't done an exhaustive look, certainly across all of the state legislatures. And a lot of state legislatures work on different timelines. So we may see bills later this year when Indiana's session is long finished, where in other states it's more full time or at different timelines. So I won't say that Indiana is the only one, but Indiana can be a leader on this. And I think Representative Stuwald and Representative Shackelford can kind of speak to that later in the program as to what they see around the country, too. But we haven't seen this kind of comprehensive reform that has this level of support from the groups on both sides, traditionally on both sides of the issue, advancing this far this fast.
Right, right. Well, we're about to wrap up. If you could give us a quick 60-second summary of what's next for this bill.
The next thing is for the guy. I mean, that's the amazing thing is we're still got a month and a half or a month plus left of session, and the governor still is all he has to do is sign it. That will probably happen soon. It has the support of the governor's administration, and then it will become law. A lot of the provisions in it don't take effect until July 1st. That's typical of most pieces of legislation passed by Indiana. But that's the only step left for this to become law is the stroke of a pen, and we'll be getting that, I would expect, relatively soon.
Okay, so our listeners can expect July 1st to see more information about this and how it'll impact them.
Yeah, and then, of course, we'll see things play out long term.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Brandon, for joining us. Brandon Smith is our State House reporter and really gave us some great details on this. We're going to now head up to our next segment after the break. Coming up, we'll speak with two key lawmakers behind this bill, Republican State Representative Greg Stuwald and Democratic State Representative Robin Shackelford.
I talked to multiple experts from multiple states who were very supportive of what we're trying to do. One expert in one state said this is very similar to what we try to do in our state, and we couldn't get it done.
We truly support the efforts of this legislation. We know it is not the end-all, be-all. It is a great compromise, but at the same time, it is a great collaboration.
We'll find out what state wasn't able to do this and what the great compromise was. That's all coming up next. You're listening to All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about House Bill 1006 and the push for reforms when it comes to law enforcement. The bill passed the House in February, and then on Tuesday, the state Senate, which means all it needs is the governor's signature. With us now are two lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle who have collaborated on this piece of legislation. Republican State Representative Greg Stuwald is the author of the bill, and Democratic State Representative Robin Shackelford is one of the co-sponsors and chair of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Well, I'd like to start with you, Representative Stuwald. Why did you feel the time was right to propose a bill like this?
Well, actually, as Brandon said, to follow up on his comments, I was in a lot of conversations with the Indiana State Sheriff's Association on some jail overcrowding issues. And during one of those conversations, they talked about the need for some support for law enforcement. And I've always referred to this as law enforcement enhancement as opposed to reform. And that conversation led to many others. After that, we started getting other people involved. Over the course of time, we included the Indiana State Police, Indiana State Police Alliance, the FOP, the Sheriff's Association, Chiefs of Police. And those conversations evolved around my question to them, what can the General Assembly do to enhance law enforcement's ability to provide the best service to protect and serve the good citizens of Indiana. And there were many, many conversations. This is over a period of many months. But the conversations kind of got into three different categories. Every group who supports every aspect of this, by the way, but every group told me, they said, you know, Greg, everything we do begins with the best training. And if we can have the best training available, then obviously we'll have a better product as far as law enforcement is concerned. So that was a major topic of conversation. And we dealt with the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy, which was built back in the 70s and really was in need of repair and updating dramatically. So that became a major part of the conversation. And then specifically when the training, we began conversations about de-escalation. I do want to say that the academy already teaches that, but we put it in statute because that increases it to a kind of a yearly update. So when the law enforcement officers go up for their, you know, like their continuing legal education, that will be a topic of teaching each time they return for updated legal education. Secondly, all law enforcement supported the concept of car and body cams. We had many, many discussions on that. That was a everybody supported that, and they said, "Listen, everything we do is just a search for the truth, and we feel that car and body cams do exactly that for us." The car and body cams you will not see until 6, but that they were taken out at the last minute and put into the budget. There'll be a grant program for all the county sheriff associations and the cities and towns, the local law enforcement who don't currently have car and body cams, and that'll be in the budget in the form of a grant program. Mm-hmm. And lastly, the third topic that was a major topic conversation we dealt with very strongly here in 1006, and that was the ability for law enforcement to decertify an officer. In Indiana, if you go through the law enforcement academy, an officer is certified and can be a law enforcement officer in any agency in the state of Indiana. And they wanted to expand that ability, at least for a consideration for an officer to be decertified. So we did that. Used to be that had to be a felony or a couple of misdemeanors. But now we've included that even though their conduct may not rise to a criminal activity, that the hiring agency can, in fact, proceed with that process. We did make sure they had every due process right. We gave them a evidentiary hearing at the state level with full discovery processes. So we have to protect them from that aspect. And thirdly,
I was just going to say, it sounds like there are a lot of moving parts to this. But I think for the sake of our listeners, I want to ask Representative Shackelford, you know, you mentioned in a hearing a few weeks ago, this bill was a great compromise. What did you mean by compromise? You know, I know we're painting a great picture of everyone coming together, but were there some parts that maybe you had to let go of?
Well, most definitely. As Brandon said, we released our justice reform agenda with about 30 plus bills on there trying to seek reform in our justice system. Within this bill, when we're talking about hiring and firing and promoting officers, there was still a couple of things that people still wanted that we couldn't quite get an agreement on. One would be making sure there was more implicit bias and diversity training, anti-racism training on a more in-depth basis, a more regular basis. Two, we were seeking to get regular mental health checks among our officers. We know they usually get mental health evaluations when they're involved in a shooting, but because our officers are involved with such day-to-day trauma that they deal with, we were wanting to make sure that they were mentally available and mentally equipped as they're out in the field. And then three, most people wanted a total ban on chokeholds and also a ban on no-knock warrants. In particular, with the no-knock warrants, looking at what happened in the Breonna Taylor case. So these were just some of those pieces that we couldn't get a full agreement on. I will say for that implicit bias training and that diversity training, we have sat down with Superintendent Carter, talk about how the $70 million is going to be spent on the facility. And he is willing to take our input and change some of that curriculum to make sure that it's more face-to-face, more interactive, and getting the depth training that they need for their officers.
Well, speaking of the $70 million in this bill to improve facilities and training, Representative Steuerwald, I mean, when people hear big numbers like this, they might think, why doesn't this money go to fix up a building where people, why is it going to a building to fix up where people are being trained to police other people? And why is this money not used to help disenfranchised or disadvantaged communities or improve schools or build better roads? Can you walk us through how money works in these types of bills?
Well, the number was based upon a study that was done, completed a couple of years ago, as to what the needs of the Law Enforcement Academy are. And so that number is based in large part on that study that was done. So it was not a number we picked out of the air. We had a good basis for it, and that was the reason why we put that number in the bill.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Shackelford, you know, you mentioned chokeholds and no-knock warrants were debated upon. And I think, you know, there might be the argument when we've heard so much negative association with things like chokeholds in policing. Why is it so hard to just completely eliminate it? What is the argument to keep it in for certain circumstances?
So I think the officers still wanted to have the ability to use it if their life was in danger. Across the state, you have different agencies, have different rules. They police different areas. In one city, it may just be one officer covering a large amount of country roads, a large amount of space, and they may be out there by themselves compared to a more urban area where it's more densely populated, where you could get backup real quickly. So the pushback on this, and not to totally ban chokeholds, was we still need to give that officer the ability that if their life is in danger, they can be able to use this technique. And what we did in the bill was raise it to another level that it can only be used as deadly force and define exactly what it was. So that's how we ended up with that compromise.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and exactly right. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I said... that's exactly right. Robin explained it very well. We defined it and we included it in the deadly force part of the Indiana statute. So it could be used in situations, life-threatening situations, same as using a firearm. And that's why mm-hmm. we included it within that definition.
Mm-hmm. And earlier we heard a clip, Representative Steuerwald, where you mentioned you had reached out and talked to folks in other states. And there was one state that was like, you guys are getting this done and we haven't been able to. Can you tell us what state that was?
Well, I don't know if I should get into that. I spoke to multiple experts who were very helpful. I want to make sure I say that this bill would never have happened without the cooperation 100% from law enforcement here in Indiana. They were beyond explaining just how valuable they were, and they were the impetus for almost everything here. If and when during this month-long process that I ever had an idea, they were very supportive of everything we did. We had spoke to Sheriff Association in Florida and experts from other states who had said, you know, ideally, if you can get some of these things done, much of the discussion from the experts had to deal with the rogue or what they call now a wandering officer who will have a disciplinary action in one agency. He will say, hey, if you'll drop your action, I'll resign and move on. Mm-hmm. We are saying by statute now that that process continues. They had so many examples of an officer that was in trouble and resigned. And then they found out that he was actually hired at another agency in another county. And they were very disappointed in that. And that's why we opened the employment records, which is as far as I know, the first in Indiana and probably many states that allow a complete openness of what the officer's employment record was, including any disciplinary actions with no limitation as to time. It goes back to the day he was hired. And as long as the former employing agency acts in good faith, they have total immunity from giving the hiring agency all of that officer's employment records. We think that's going to be a very important aspect of this bill.
If you're just joining us, a reminder to our listeners, you can send us questions or comments on law enforcement reform in Indiana by heading over to Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Representative Shackelford, I know that there were a lot of folks that came on board, a lot of organizations that joined support of this bill, from the Indiana Black Expo to Concerned Clergy. Has this happened before, this amount of support for a bill?
So I would say we do see a great support for a lot of these bills that we push through, but to get the community and law enforcement and the legal, as far as the prosecutor counsel and the public defender counsel, that usually doesn't happen. First of all, you can't get those two agencies on the same page, let alone all the law enforcement agencies with the legal agencies. So to get all of those and the community, yes, this was a great feat and very historical.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Stuerwell, you had just mentioned how law enforcement agencies all came together. I mean, were there any seeds of doubt at all? Was this just a great agreement across the board? I feel like there had to have been some kind of debate or discussion or convincing.
Well, not as much as you might think, but it's hard to describe here the number of conversations and meetings and in-person meetings and Zoom calls we had vetting all these issues in great detail. Before we even filed the bill at the end of December, we probably had 15, maybe 20 iterations of the bill, trying to hone it down with everybody's input as much as possible. Once we had the policymakers from the different agencies involved ask the topics, then they kind of turned the issue over to their individual attorneys who worked with us on getting the language that we needed. So they were instrumental in helping us get this to the point. The bill went through the entire House and Senate without an amendment. So that's a testament to how well we had done in getting the bill in what we considered the final form. So I was very thankful that, you know, Rob and I worked so well together. We discussed throughout the summer and fall what we were doing, what we were attempting to do. And when we finally got the final product, obviously to go through the entire system without an amendment or one negative vote in either chamber, I think Rob, I can speak for Rob, we both were very extremely pleased with the result.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Shackelford, what's next now for the bill? What are you hoping to see once the governor signs this?
So I'm excited about 1006, but like we said, that's not the end-all, be-all. We'll be excited to see it implemented. But as we mentioned, there's many more justice reform bills, many more issues that we still need to conquer as we go through session. We have some of those bills still alive to help out the community. But some of the bills we'll just have to work on again during the summer and bring back, because as we know in the state legislature, it could take years for things to actually get passed, and we work on them for years, whether it's racial profiling, making sure we have a more defined hate crimes bill. So there are several things out there that we'll continue to work on into the summer and next session.
Sounds like we have a lot to keep an eye on and to follow. Representative Stuerwald, just a minute left here. If you could summarize, you know, what your hopes are for the future with this.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how quickly this has a noticeable effect, and I think parts of this bill will be immediate. I think there's going to be an immediacy for the termination of these wandering officers, and the training will be kind of a more of a long-term effect. So I think we've covered many bases here. There's always obviously more room for discussion, more things to do. But this was a pretty big lift for us, and so we have a great start, and I'm extremely grateful for everybody and their support and help with where we got to on this bill.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We just spoke with Republican State Representative Greg Stuerwald, author of the bill. for Law Enforcement Reform and Democratic State Representative Robin Shackelford, one of the co-sponsors and chair of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus. If you have any questions or comments for any of our guests on today's program, get in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook at All in Indiana. You can also download our app, All in Vox Pop. You can leave us a voice message there, and we may use it in the show. Coming up in just a couple of moments, we'll hear from members of the ACLU and NAACP on why they decided to support this bill and if it falls short. I'm Miriam Soeb. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. We just heard from lawmakers on House Bill 1006 and the attempts to reform some law enforcement practices. But what do others think about it? Is this really going to change anything? With us now, Katie Blair, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy with the ACLU of Indiana, and Roderick E. Bohannon, Senior Attorney with Indiana Legal Services and Co-Chair of the Legal Redress Committee with the NAACP. So we'll start with Katie. The ACLU has come out in support of this bill. Why did you decide to support it?
Yeah, so we decided to support it because we believe that a lot of the reforms in this legislation are vital. The updated decertification process and the increased transparency around that, we are happy with. The body-worn camera provisions that put penalties in place for officers who maliciously cover their cameras. We're happy to see that. But there were a few aspects that we did have some problems with. You know, we weren't happy that chokeholds weren't completely banned in this legislation. And we've mentioned that several times before. We were happy to see that the de-escalation training is going to be included in pre-basic training, in-service training, and executive training. But we know that trainings are only as effective unless they're backed up by appropriate, you know, departmental policies or statutory limits on officer authority. So we're excited to see those changes. But yeah, there are still some areas that we could see improved.
And Roderick, the NAACP is supporting this bill, but as we heard earlier from Representative Robin Shackelford, some great compromises were made. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment. As this bill was being made to sausage, the NAACP, ACLU, other folks were involved in turning discussions. And of course, if you know the legislative process, you give up something, you gain things, you often don't get what you want. So from my standpoint, this is a beginning point. And every chess game is an opening move. It's what this is. It's the first time that we've had very conservative Republicans even invite the idea of police reform, never alone legislation. So Representative Stillwell needs to be given credit. Because when he came and talked to us about this, he called us and said, this is what I have an idea. He called us last summer. And we was quite surprised, like, huh, who, what? And so, mm-hmm. You know, we were pleased. There are others who are on the judicial committee who reached out to us and said, look, we know that it's not everything you want, but we're trying to get the concept, specifically after what happened last summer in Indianapolis, when there was such a climate at the legislature. And a lot of the bills that we probably won't talk about, but we tend to turn to being more in the line of so-called police effort to control the citizens. So you had the anti-riot bill, you had in turn the take away authority from the mayor's office, you had in turn the giving police officer much more leeway than they already have by statutory. So mm-hmm. We think that the bill has gone through. Now the question is whether to get the governor to sign it. And the second part would be in terms of implementation, which would be our next level of work we have to do.
Right. Now, Katie, were you surprised at all at how fast this passed and the level of support on both sides of the aisle?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of the first bills I can say that the ACLU has probably supported that has flown by so quickly through the legislative process. We're really happy to see bipartisan support and for it to just chug along like it did. yeah, we're excited for this step and that folks have been working together so hard.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, you know, earlier, just there were some things that you had hoped for that would be in this bill that weren't. Can you give us a little bit more detail on some of the things that are included? I know we've heard in the other segments, everyone kind of talking about limited use of chokeholds or maybe no-knock warrants aren't included, but then there's $70 million for a training facility. Can you just kind of break it down to us, like, what are the key aspects of this bill that everyone can understand that and how it'll affect them?
Yeah. So, well, some of the key aspects that will be affected, you know, they've updated the definition, this definition of chokeholds, which is limited to intentional obstruction of airways. That definition we are, you know, not completely happy with. It means that an attempted vascular restraint, like the restraint that killed Eric Garner, that intends to obstruct the flow of blood but unintentionally becomes a deadly restraint, is not covered by this definition. We don't think it goes far enough to ban this chokeholds. But, you know, we all are very happy to see that, you know, these officers will be held more accountable in the decertification process and with, you know, more restrictions on wearing body worn cameras and getting trained on de-escalation so that, you know, we don't see, hopefully we don't see as many instances as we definitely have sweeping the nation and here in Indiana. Mm-hmm.
And Roderick, this bill sounds like something new to many people, but there's long been a call for reform from communities of color, not just Indiana, but across the country. Is this bill the change people are looking for? Is it a step in the right direction?
It's a step in the right direction. This bill helped at least kill a couple of bills that would have likely been imposed had this bill had failed. When you look at, for example, take away authority from the chief police in the mayor's office. This bill was critical in turn to be able to not have that bill get passed. You know, when you look at the notion in terms of de-escalation, we've been arguing for a long time that police departments across the state should be doing de-escalation. They all said they didn't know what that meant. They all said they didn't have curriculum. They all said they have the money. So at least in this extent, it now requires every police officer in the state to be trained in that manner. And it would continue. We put in the legislation so that the law enforcement academy has to update their training mechanism as more and more different methods come into existence about how to de-escalate situations. More so training the mindset, because de-escalation is a mindset. So you have to now change the mindset of police officers to understand how to de-escalate, when to de-escalate, and you know, when do you move the point to use of force. Now, we weren't happy to no-knock warrant because we thought that was critical, but that's the next step. We weren't happy totally in terms of when you look at chokeholds. There's a lot of loopholes, as Katie indicated, in terms of that you can put on the neck restraint, but because they're not viewed in terms of sense, we think a chokehold meaning someone behind you and got their elbow in your neck or grab you by your throat, they view it as being chokehold, not realize that police department are taught a myriad of ways to do exactly in different manners for chokeholds. So that's the next level. The escalation, I mean, the whole in terms of officers being able to report history of police officers for new employer, that's a beginning step because the way the statute reads, it doesn't necessarily require. It gives immunity to vet that the police department choose to do so, but it's not required. And so the next step would be that, you know, that the police department can't not say, well, I wasn't asked. Well, I didn't hear that Johnny Jones going to ABC Police Department and let me call them and let them know why we fired him.
Right.
Of course, the employer lawyer is going to have a good time arguing about the statute, whether it violates employment rights. So that's going to be played out next.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, this is more of a broad bill, Katie. And so what it sounds like is people are looking for more specificity, like really spelling out what exactly everything is, because perhaps when things are very broad, it's easy to kind of blur the lines.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. More transparency. We see that there is going to be more transparency in the process of decertification. But, you know, we'd like to know what is going to go into this this de-escalation training. And we'd like to see how this really plays out within law enforcement as things move mm-hmm. forward.
Well, how do you hold folks accountable once they pass a bill and these changes are supposed to be implemented and go into effect July 1st? How is there a way to a system to make sure this stuff gets implemented?
Well, this is right. There are a couple ways to do that. First of all, I would say to your listening audience, read the statute. And then once you pull it down, pass it on to your friends, because the more people know what's in it, the easier it is to turn enforcement. Second, I would ask every citizen to put together in their own, it's not just Indianapolis, but in Hampden County, in Hancock County, in Shelbyville, in Rush County, put together a review committee that you can then ask of your police department, what's your process in terms of, how do you review your officers? What research do you do? Are you following the statute in terms of getting full information? Are you disclosing full information? Following up in terms of understanding in terms of the officers in terms of their training. Those are critical because the enforcement is on a local level. Yes, from the NACP standpoint, we'll probably get complaints and we will begin looking, trying to figure out, you know, where's the legal status on it. And the ACO probably get complaints and they'll be trying to figure out. But the reality is we're only two agencies with limited resources. The way we're going to enforce it is that every citizen in Indiana understand the statute, create their own review force community group in New York City where they have a police department, I don't care if they're town or county, and then have access to interaction with your leadership and ask these questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd ask the same question of you, Katie. Is this something you'll be keeping tabs on and how to make sure this is implemented?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be keeping tabs on this. And we'll be ready to hold folks accountable in our various ways that we do that through advocacy and litigation and all sorts of ways that we hold people accountable through the ACLU. We're also going to be holding folks accountable. You know, this is a great step. Like we've been saying over and over again, HB 1006 is great. But there's still a lot of bills that are alive in this legislature. You know, we still have the anti-protest bill, Senate Bill 198. We still have Senate Bill 311, which is a bill that would weaken use of force policies and would make it harder for police to be held accountable. I believe that that goes kind of directly in the face of HB 1006 and the work that we've all done so hard together in the community. So, you know, that bill, these bills are still in play. They can still be passed. Mm-hmm. And so it's up to us now to talk to those legislators that, you know, all worked so wonderful together to pass this proactive reform. Well, now let's stop this bad reform.
Mm-hmm. If I can add, well, there's some other bills. We'll talk, for example, the juvenile bill. There's a bill that that we've had to look at in terms of crimes or a young adult who may have a gun being transmitted to adult courts. And then, you know, up to the age of 23, if you're a young person mm-hmm. which is contrary to the statute that's being enacted, being passed, in terms of no longer requiring to have permit to carry a weapon. So we need to worry about that. The police reform is broad-based, not just the legislation, but also in terms of practices and policy that enforce or enlarge police officers' authorities as they interact with citizens.
Mm-hmm. Well, as Indiana residents, do you feel that this bill will enable you to build more trust with local law enforcement?
It's a starting point. Mm-hmm. Interest with police department and relationships are personal. And I say, for example, we have a good relationship with the chief police. You get a new chief police, that may change. And so that's really where it is. But in terms of getting police officers to know that the citizens, what they expect of them is really important. Because once the police know what citizenry expects of them in terms of performance, it makes it easier to develop a relationship.
Mm-hmm. And Katie, how do you feel? Do you feel like the community is more trusting now, seeing that this is passing and there's so much agreement? Does it sort of lift people's spirits that maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel here?
I think that yes and no. I think that it's great to be able to show that something good and bipartisan happened and it's a good step. But also, like you said, implementation. And also, you know, not all police departments are created equally. So we're making these moves at a statewide level, which is wonderful. But then what does that mean, you know, back in folks' hometowns? What does it mean, not just in Marion County, but in Fort Wayne or South Bend or even our smaller towns? So it's kind of yet to be seen.
So what are the key takeaways for folks who are tuning in that they should know about this? Because, you know, we hear bills passing all the time and we just go on with our lives. Is this going to make an impact in their day to day?
I think yes. Police also always complain. I mean, prisoners will complain that they have bad apples and they can't get rid of them. At least it gives us mechanisms to do that. That didn't exist before. You saw that here in Indianapolis when the chief police wanted to fire a couple police officers and couldn't because of the statute. So it began giving citizens a way to begin looking at that issue. More importantly, it forces the chief police to begin looking at complaints that are lobbied by citizens against a police officer. Because all this goes into their personnel file. And so that also says to an officer, you have a chance to one to move on someplace else. Your personnel file now follows you. So you can't just simply wipe it underneath the ground and say, I'm done with it. And what I did in the past, nobody will find out. No, it's not. So I think to that extent, that's probably, if anything else, one of the most important things to take from this legislation.
All right. Well, we have about a minute left. Katie, any final thoughts on what we can take away from this bill?
Yeah, well, I agree with what Rod just stated so eloquently. I just, yeah, bow down to his knowledge all the time in these conversations and having greatly enjoyed working with him over this past year. And I think what I would want people to take away from this is that, you know, the fight isn't over this legislative session. We have, you know, a month left to go now that they've put it. Signing day is now April 21st. And so that while this bill is moving forward, there's still a lot of time for funny business. We still have bad bills out there and we still have plenty of time for them to sneak bad amendments in. So yay, let's have a good time, but then like stay alive and be ready for this session.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you to all of our guests who joined us on today's program, State House reporter Brandon Smith, State Representative Greg Stuerwald, and Robin Shackelford, Katie Blair of the Indiana ACLU, and Roderick Bohannon of the NAACP. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Gason, and Tim Brooks. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like to hear today's show or even past episodes, find them anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us on Monday as we look into what Indiana is doing to curb human trafficking. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.